Will sales organizations become more data-driven? Will PS organizations change as AI capabilities become ubiquitous? These are two very different questions, but today we have two guests that are prepared to address both of these questions. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I'm joined by two special guests here. We have Steve Hollowell, who serves as the VP of Professional Services at Zoom Info. And we also have Millie Beetham, who is the Senior Director in Go-to-Market Innovation at Zoom Info. And if you don't know, Zoom Info is a company that specializes in helping sales teams leverage data and technology. So let's get this insight engine humming. Welcome both of you to Tectonic. Steve, I'm going to start with you. Can you just give us an overview of the key solutions that Zoom Info offers and how they empower B2B sales and marketing teams?
Yeah, absolutely. So what a lot of people know us for is providing data. Commonly, it was, I need contact data for the person I'm going to go reach out to. We have a lot more than that. We have a universe of data in terms of, you think about everything available on the web. Huge fraction of that you can source through us in terms of understanding what your customers are doing, who you want to focus on, and how you're going to customize your outreach to them. But we also then go into how you activate that data. And so whether that is creating demand, converting demand, or driving pipeline, there's a tremendous amount we do to take that data and make it actionable, including our new Copilot product that puts that power right directly in the hands of a seller using AI to cut through some of the noise.
And remind me, how long have you been around as a company? When did you start aggregating all this data?
Oh, no, it's funny. Zoom Info has gone through a few iterations.
Yeah.
I think the original Zoom Info was founded, I want to say, 2003.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's been a hot minute.
Merged with Discover Org 2020, Millie. Do I have that right?
So you guys have been around and started, and so really is a very traditional information company, right? And now we're in a world where it's a whole new game with the new tools that are available and the ability to aggregate more information to provide more insights around it. So I really look forward to getting into that. And Steve, you and I had one conversation before this, and we talked about the fact that we both are very simpatico on the fact that we believe that sales organizations are to become much more data-driven than they have been historically. And even I'm sure you guys have been putting a lot of good data on the table for years, and you know, getting salespeople to use it sometimes can be a challenge. So I'll ask you first, Steve, what are you seeing there in terms of salespeople actually leaning in to data and information in a different way?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of buckets for that. I think that the first bucket is you think about all the decisions that if you have a salesperson on their own, they would have to make on a daily basis. That could be, what accounts do I focus on? Who do I reach out to within those accounts? What do I say to them when I reach out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, traditionally, not too long ago, people were going through phone books to try to figure this out. It was kind of a random walk. Mm-hmm. And more recently in software, you have a big focus on volume. Whoever I have in front of me, I'm going to just kind of go after and try to drive the biggest initial numbers I can without regard to, am I driving demand in the right places?
Mm-hmm.
So the first big piece is, am I focusing in the right places? Then can I replicate what's effective as I'm reaching out? If there's a certain way I tend to engage customers that works, can I scale that across my sellers? There's an awful lot, it's not Zoom Info's domain, but I think also an interesting domain around the performance of sellers and understanding there's more data than ever about what your salespeople are doing and what your customers are doing. When you pull all that together, there's a tremendous amount you can do to optimize how sales works. You know, I think sales was one time viewed as an art. Increasingly, there's a lot of science we can wrap around it. And I think that domain and discipline is something that we see emerging rapidly. Millie, I know you've been a big, big proponent of this, that ability to design and architect your go-to-market system using the data you have in an effective way is very much what the best companies are doing.
So you're on an interesting thread here, and I want to kick it to you, Millie, on this. So one assertion, right, is it just if I'm a sales executive, account executive, I am going to be just using data and information more aggressively than I did before. I just think that that is true. But Steve, you started to chip on this thing that also now, because we have data and we see how people are using it or not using it, the ability to give salespeople ongoing real-time feedback, you leveraging information, right? Like talking to these kind of customers is worth the time. This is not, you know, using this type of messaging is working. This is not. So Millie, what are you seeing there in terms of this feedback loop of, you know, information to salespeople to help make them better on a daily basis?
Yeah, I feel like there's a really tangible example of like sales used to think about, oh, okay, I sit down at my desk, who in my book of business am I going to go out and, you know, contact today? Yep. And that was, okay, I have this static data about who the company is and who works there. Yep. And that's about it, right? And yep. What that sort of became was, okay, I'm going to go cold outbound to that company. Mm-hmm. And I think today what's really interesting is we have this like explosion of signal data, right?
Yeah.
Sales teams are armed with people who have visited, you know, their company's website recently. They're able to see potentially intent signal data, which is, you know, a collection of people at that company have been looking at these types of topics. Oh, so salesperson now knows, okay, this category is potentially of interest and that category is related to these products that I sell. There's information that's being gathered, right? ZoomInfo offers sort of news information, you know, information about a company's M&A activity or recent layoffs, et cetera.
Yep.
And then, you know, you're able to also parse what the tech stack looks like at an organization. And so whether it be that you are selling and you're looking for, you know, companies that are using your competitors or that integrate, right, with your solution, they have integrations, all of that becomes this dynamic sort of behavioral data set that can be pushed to a seller today to tell them, okay, hey, this company is showing all of these different signals yep. together. That makes them the first person
you should go today.
And reach out to today.
Yep.
And I think that takes us from a world where sales was cold, right? Sometimes yep. outside in the cold,
yep.
right? To like every interaction should be or can be warm. And I think that's a huge evolution that we've gone through recently.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think the other big change that's happening, a lot of this data has been out there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But it's overwhelming for salespeople. I think most salespeople today would still tell you that it is. It still yeah. is. One of the big things that AI is unlocking for us is the ability to synthesize that data. AI is great at a huge volume of data, synthesize it down to what really matters, and be able to make that much more accessible and usable to the yep. sales rep. And in other circumstances of the company broadly, to the sales management or other folks in the company, so that you can identify the real signal amongst the noise. You know, I mean, I remember 10 years ago, I had a marketing team saying, hey, Steve, we've got this nifty new tool that provides all sorts of insight about our buyers. We got to go enable the sales team about this. Sales team didn't want anything to do with it because it was just one more thing to look at, even though there might have been power in the data. And yeah. so the ability now to make this very relevant and actionable and succinct is yep. one of the big unlocks today.
So I want to go a little bit down a rabbit trail here and really just be honest with me in terms of what you're seeing with the sales teams that you work with. So the first click here is the fact that, look, instead of just having a mound of data and it's kind of overwhelming and it's not super structured, we're getting to a world where it's like, look, AI models are going to sift through all that. They're going to prioritize and they're going to say, look, we know based on all this data, you should be talking to company A today. Okay. So they're much more succinct, much more targeted. So that is a huge click over. The next click, though, is the issue of prioritizing and responding to that, let's just say a qualified lead. So I don't want to throw a bunch of salespeople under the bus here, but I've been in this industry a long, long time, work with a lot of salespeople, and there is a common theme, right? So let's say, for example, you know, a customer success manager is talking to a customer and says, oh, I think this customer is interested in product A, and they throw that lead over to sales. And sales says, I don't know. I was talking to that customer last week. I don't see it. I'm just not sure. You know, marketing sends them a lead. Nah, I was already talking to that customer. I just don't. So, you know, sales wants to chase the leads historically that they believe in, right? It's a very emotional gut. I know about that account. We're talking about a world where they may wake up and it says, hey, you need to be talking to company A. All the signal liquidity is there. The models tell us, and they may look at it initially and go, I don't know, really? Company A? I'm feeling really good about company B. Do I really have to talk to company A? So tell me, I'm just going to be candid. How are you seeing salespeople get their heads around the fact that this data is serious? I cannot ignore this. This isn't just somebody's opinion, and it's not my opinion of instant opinion. This is very model driven. What do you see in there?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not as much from the salesperson's perspective, but from the sort of management perspective or the company's yeah. perspective. I think companies are recognizing that it's not enough today to put a score or that data yeah. right in front of their salespeople mm-hmm. without context.
Yeah.
One of the things that we get asked a lot on the services side is, hey, we're building this insights tool or we're rolling out right this new intelligence platform. okay, it's going to have, you know, this fit score, or this propensity score. Mm-hmm. And what we get from those customers is that's great and we must do that. Mm-hmm. But how can you guys think about sort of an industrialization of the context around that?
Yeah.
So that not just when we enable on why this is useful and why it's probably right, but the salesperson is sort of consistently seeing why and essentially starting to build trust in that underlying data or that underlying model.
Yeah. I'm glad I asked this question, because what I'm hearing there is a best practice is you got to provide context. The model can spit out an answer and it can say, look, this customer on a scale of 1 to 10, they're ready to buy. They are a 10. Go talk to them this morning, right? That's your first call you should be making. And if all they see is a 10 and a company name, they may go, again, I think company B is more. But if it's a 10 and here is why, boom, 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 boom. The more context you provide, then the more compelling it is for the salesperson to say, okay, I get that. That's the company I should be talking to. Did I get that correct?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And down to even the like SDR level, right? Mm-hmm. You have an entirely tech literate generation. Like, data is king. They've known and understood algorithms from the time that they became an adult.
Yeah.
So even the SDR level is asking for that type of context.
That content, interesting.
Right? Yeah. I think that's a really fascinating sort of like development even more recently.
You know, to use a concrete example, it's go reach out to Thomas because his company released earnings yesterday. These were the couple of takeaways about what's happening in their business.
Yeah.
And we saw that three people from his company were on your pricing page yesterday.
Awesome.
And so that's why this is relevant.
That's super helpful. So really backing that up. So let's talk about the fact that, and again, this is one of the powerful things about AI. It's a powerful thing about what companies like you are doing for a living is bringing in multiple signals, website interactions, phone conversations, right? To help understand the customer. Give, you know, the audience a sense here of what type of data sources you're drawing on and synthesizing. And
I can share one, being able to de-anonymize like the visits to your website, I think is something that has been sort of very much best practice in marketing for a really long time. I think.
What do you mean? I'm sorry. And just break that down for the audience. When you say,
So for example, right, you log into your computer and you visit, right, a company website, right? Mm-hmm. You're attached to an IP address. And today you can then map that IP address to a company. And you can take that web visit from something that looks like an IP address that has no context around who is visiting that site to, oh, actually, somebody from company A visited that site. And what's more is if that person from company A then goes to multiple pages on that site, you can actually then map back that their journey looked like A or B, right? And that can be super, super useful. I think that used to be sort of table stakes on the marketing side, but now salespeople are seeing how potentially impactful understanding sort of where somebody's going on that site to be able to potentially parse out, right, what products they might be interested in. And therefore, if you kind of understand which products, maybe parsing the actual person who visited the site. In addition, you're sort of mining, you mentioned phone conversations.
Yeah.
You know, conversation intelligence is sort of, again, table stakes in a sales organization or go-to-market organization today. If you're recording, right, and you have all of these transcripts around phone conversation, not only can you, you know, as an enablement team, use them to tag, to drive, you know, behavior change and alignment to messaging and things like that and provide coaching, but you can also mine that to say, oh, this customer across these 7-10 recent calls mentioned, you know, this problem and this problem and this potential use case. And you can map all of that back to the salesperson and again contextualize that as it's, hey, they mentioned this, but I'm not seeing an opportunity open, right?
Yeah, you start
to drive, right, some of the operationalization, sort of driving sort of these questions or this ongoing conversation to that rep.
Even things like podcasts, like, so we're now pulling in podcast data. So if somebody wanted to sell to me, this podcast probably would have interesting context for them about what I do and what I care about. You get that data otherwise, you know, think about the amount of time and effort involved in doing that versus being able to type a couple of prompts into our Copilot tool and have it spit that type of information out. I've got a meeting with Steve. What should I know about it?
No.
Yeah. There's probably one other piece of this that's really interesting. It's that there are these like different types of signals, right? At ZoomInfo, we talk about it as, right, there's first party data signals, right? Like maybe there, you know, was activity on an opportunity or somebody changed the stage of an opportunity. Maybe it's just which products a customer sort of added recently or titled for recently. There's second party data signals, which is like there are review sites, right? things like G2 or Trust Radius, mm-hmm. right? And if somebody goes to those sites, you know, they have a variety of information that a customer or potential person researching your products might be looking at. Mm-hmm. That second party data is really, or signals is really useful. And then there's third party signals we talked about. The news or earnings, you know, podcast mentions, intent, classic intent, et cetera. It's the combination of all of those things is really sort of the unlock. And again, with generative AI, you can actually combine all of those signals together and make sense of them together for, you know, one company or for many, many companies. And it's by being able to contextualize those together that you're able to give something pithy and actually sort of like tactile or tangible to the seller to help continue to drive, right, that trust and that that understanding of what exactly the scenario is within that organization.
So I'm going to put two things on the table here around what you guys have been talking about. So the first one, I actually want to wind back to this conversation of signal liquidity from just the phone conversations, right? So I was talking to one of our members literally just yesterday, and we got on this topic because we use a tool and we record whether we're doing, you know, an inquiry call with a member or it's a customer success interaction or it's a sales interaction. We record all that. And we've been doing that for a year, year and a half. And it is absolutely a game-changing capability. For people not familiar with this, or we're not talking about just raw transcripts, we're talking about you can get, hey, here are the main points that were talked about. Here you can inquiry that transcript and say, hey, what is the thing they're most nervous about? Or remind me. I mean, so in the person I was talking to, they're like, oh yeah, we haven't really looked at that. And so I would say to anybody listening, if you're talking about sales and service touch points and you are not taking advantage of that basic mature AI capability, you're already behind. I mean, would you guys agree with that? I mean, it's just like that's, I mean, you are already behind. If you're listening to this, you're like, oh gosh, we've never looked at that. It's like that is a miss, you know, already. But the second thing I'll put on the table, because this is the massive unlock, because there's an unlock, for example, getting signal liquidity just from phone conversations. The massive unlock is what you were on, Millie, which is AI can do something that no competitive analysis human team, no sales team is going to do on their own, which is aggregate massive amounts of information from multiple signals. Everything you're talking about, podcasts, financial information, all the kind of stuff, you know, the phone stuff, the stuff that's in our CRM system, bring all that together and start to model. And that model gets smarter and smarter and smarter to make the recommendations. That's the massive unlock. I mean, that has just never been possible, you know, previously. And now that is something that is not science fiction or future. That's something you can, as you guys know, because you do this for a living, that is something you can start to unlock for your sales team today. And, you know, it is huge. And it also leads to predictive modeling, right? So I know one of your solutions, you know, you talk about predictive modeling. So explain to the audience, maybe I'll start with you, Steve, I'll go to Millie. What type of things do you help predict for your customers?
Yeah. Well, just, you know, picking up on what you were saying a minute ago, just to kind of set the vision about where this can go, you know, mm-hmm. I think one of the use cases that a lot of people have gotten really excited about in the go-to-market space is, boy, my SDRs are doing a lot of really repetitive stuff. How do I use AI to make that a lot less repetitive?
For sure.
And add much more value there, right? Yeah. And so if I think about what I need to do that, first question is, well, who do I engage? If I'm in an outbound context, where do I focus? That's mm-hmm. one of the places that we add. We do a lot of modeling, a lot of focus is which accounts are going to most likely to respond to you and mm-hmm. which accounts are also going to drive the most value for your organization. So who do I reach out to now? Then it's going into the, okay, well, now I got to go say something smart. And that saying something smart is this synthesis of all the data and all the signals that just that today, a great SDR in a manual context is going to go do a bunch of research. They're going to read the 10K. They're going to read LinkedIn. They're going to learn as much as they can about the person they're reaching out to, and will reach out armed with the benefit of that context. Mm-hmm. When we can start to pull that in at scale, translate it at scale, put it into a form and format that we know to be best practice, mm-hmm. now you're taking so much of what that SDR would do manually and bringing a lot of scale and efficiency
to
their work. Am I saying we're replacing that person? No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying we give them a heck of a lot of leverage.
For sure.
We're having a number of companies come to us of late and saying, hey, I've got a choice. I could add more SDRs to my team, or I can build this sort of automation with you all. I think I want the technology leverage. You know, how can you help me do that?
Well, just to build on that, I was just reading an article, and we see this in our own research, that dynamic right there, do I invest in technology to get leverage or invest in just, you know, basically raw headcount? The scale's already tipped. I don't care if you're talking about customer success resources, sales resources. So if you're in tech and you're listening, hey, that train has left the station. That is the math that leadership teams are doing, number one. Number two, I mean, I'm Mr. Candid here. You know, for anybody who's listening, everyone's saying like, AI is not going to replace jobs, not going to replace jobs. AI has already changed the headcount model in tech. It already has changed it. And companies are hiring slower and more cautiously. And if you're in sales, you're going to take down more quota with less people. If you're SDRs, you're going to be driving more revenue opportunities with less SDRs. That's the math already. I mean, so let there be no illusions about that. But what that means, again, if you're listening to this, you got to get into this game because this is where the game's going to be played. You got it. If you're a sales executive out there, you got to be looking for this leverage. If you're an SDR out there, you got to be saying, how do I use those tools? Am I working at a company that's using those tools? If you're not, if I'm you, go to a company that's using those tools. This is where the industry is going. And I want to go back to the prediction part, and maybe I'll chip on this with you, Millie, because I mean, that's the other thing about AI. It's not only really strong at bringing a lot of information, synthesizing, building models to say, hey, here's, you know, the best. It also is good at helping see around corners, right? Whether it's risks around renewals or whatever. When you guys talk about prediction models, is it prediction around leads? This lead's going to be better than the other. Are there other things you predict? What do you use the information to help predict?
Yeah, I sort of always break this into sort of two core areas. One is fit, right? Relative fit. Yeah. So that's sort of your classic ICP score that you might have heard of. But, you know, is this company a low fit or high fit? And is there propensity for them, right? If they're higher fit, probably higher propensity that they're going to convert and potentially convert, you know, at a higher average sales price. The other side of it is very much about like your dynamic data. I think it's the behavioral. And I think what's interesting about this that isn't being talked maybe as broadly right now is actually that lead scoring is the old school behavioral model. Mm-hmm. It's just that signals are not just coming from marketing, they're coming from everywhere. And so you're sort of transitioning your old school lead score into, okay, we're just building one behavioral score and we're ingesting all of the different signals, right? Whether it be, you know, from the marketing side or from across the web, from, you know, all your different data sources, et cetera. And so you kind of have these two axes of like great relative fit, right? And you have sort of that behavioral score and together, right? That really helps to tell you like, what is the propensity of that account? And you can start to, like you said, peek around corners. Yep. What's interesting though, is that's very much talked about still, I think more broadly as like a driving net new logo, right? Net new logo acquisition sort of a way of applying, you know, predictive modeling. What's really interesting is when you do that on the customer side, you have a ton of first party data models, and you can start to say, actually, what is my relative penetration into an account across my entire product suite? And where potentially should I be pointing folks to say, hey, there's actually potential opportunity or behavioral signals, right, that are saying that this customer may be interested in these additional products, therefore go and start to position, right, those additional products, potentially driving up, right, retention rates, also just basic ASP and, you know, penetrating deeper and deeper into those accounts.
Well, I mean, and just to put some color on that, I can tell you, and I'm not speaking any great, you know, wisdom here people haven't heard before, but if you look at tech companies right now, since 2022, the game is being played with the install base, not net new logo. There's just no doubt about it. So what you're on there is, again, people are sitting here, I'm in sales, I want to use predictive models to score my leads for new logos, and that's what it's all about. Hey, okay, that's part of it. But the growth, if somebody really wants to be growing at, you know, 15, 20% in SaaS or software right now, you're getting a majority of that growth by upselling and cross-selling your install base. And that new logo is still important, but the real growth game is being played there. So to your point, predictive modeling on my existing install base, which by the way, which you put on the table, I actually have even better signal liquidity because I have more, you know, and by the way, if my product team's not providing me better, you know, signal liquidity, I better go beat them up to, you know, help feed the model. But it's a great point that that's, you know, is super important right there as well. But, you know, this kind of leads into a very common challenge, very common conversation when it comes to any of these models. because it's the classic, well, you know, garbage in, garbage out. My data's shit. It's siloed. I can't get to it. Blah, 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 blah. I have a data problem. Thomas, this sounds really cool, but I have a data problem. And so our signal liquidity is just going to suck. And so how do you help your customers through that knothole? You know, what are some of the big challenges you see there? And how do you get them to the promised land on this?
It's been a big driver for our business in recent years, because that is the core of our business, is providing data and be able to provide data in the right format, the right structure, the right cleanliness behind it, to then be able to go feed these models. Obviously, we're going to be most focused on the data from outside of the four walls of the company, plus that conversational data. You know, that's going to be our power zone, but that is incredibly useful. We have a lot of companies that then take that, they buy that in the form of what we call a data cubes, where you buy kind of buy the whole data set, and then they can feed that into their models to be able to develop on top of that. But that's absolutely been a common blocker we've heard all the time. Of, boy, I went and go tried this thing. I got horrible results because my input data was bad.
Interesting.
One of the like common mistakes that I see is that the company seems to think that they need to solve it all at one time. And I think this is so critical. You do not need to solve your entire data infrastructure problem at once. Go and pick one area of your business or even one data type and go and solve that, right? But make sure that you have a plan in place to get to the promised land, like you mentioned, right? Don't start on that project with no strategy, no direction. Map out, okay, we're going to start here and we want to get there, right? And we're going to start by deduplicating. Then we're going to clean everything up. Then we're going to build a multi-vendor enrichment strategy where data cascades from all the places, right, into our systems of record. Then, okay, we're going to solve our messaging strategy, right, with data for this one very specific, maybe it's product, maybe it's industry, maybe it's using a specific signal type. You don't have to crack off everything at once. You can make incremental progress, and that will make incremental progress to your, you know, to revenue over time. And I think that's the biggest. I see, you know, I have conversations with CIOs who are trying to
the master plan.
Exactly.
Yep.
The master data management as a construct, it's almost like puts blinders on folks to say, oh, we must master all of the data. No, just take it one step at a time, right?
One other dynamic I see around that, you talked about the cross-sell and the importance of cross-sell. And, you know, you take an enterprise that's going through acquisition, they've got 20 instances of Salesforce kicking around. And guess what? They can't cross-sell because they can't talk to each other.
Yeah.
And so just at the most basic level of, do we have a clear view at the account level that we can match from one instance of Salesforce to the other with some fundamental baseline element? That can be a big unlock for folks that now I have a master key and I can start to look across and identify those cross-sell opportunities.
Yeah.
So much of this is a result of, you know, it's not a data problem. It's a people process organization problem. And Millie and I certainly spend our fair share of our time working through those things as well.
Steve, as you say that, there's just one other thing that we should, you know, make sure to cover off here. The best companies are not trying to solve the data problem in their CRM. And I think that's so important and such a big shift. The best companies are solving the data problem outside of CRM, right?
So
building data warehouse, building the data lakes on top of that, right? And using, you know, whether it be a CDP in B2B, what a concept, right? Having that outside CRM, the way it's structured today isn't necessarily set up to help you solve that problem. So if you're using the wrong tool to try to get there, that can be a huge blocker as well.
Okay. So there's a lot of things on the table here that I got to play back, and you really have my intellectual curiosity going. And I'm going to start just to make the observation around, again, I'm Mr. Candid here, these legacy systems of record. So companies that are, you know, enterprise software companies, and a big part of their value proposition was, look, I'm the place where you dump all the information. So I'm a CRM system, I'm an ERP system, I'm a whatever, right? Their value proposition, there was a lot of just like, I'm the system of record, right? This is where, you know, and what you just said, I think bone chilling comment, but real to all these legacy companies that are systems of record. Because they're not stupid. They know, they're like, holy shit, this game is changing. And just being the place that you stick in your opportunity is not going to be like, wow, that's worth X amount of dollars for every salesperson. So I am just going to predict here. I think there is going to be a massive shift in enterprise software in terms of who's taking the value dollars off the table. So that's going to be super interesting to watch. And I only comment on this because, Millie, you put it on the table, and I think you're right. I mean, the fact that this is being solved outside of the system of record is super scary to anybody who their value proposition is a system of record. The other thing that I want to chip on, we're talking about these data streams, and I'm just intellectually curious now, is you help companies with this. So here's my hypothesis. You tell me if I'm right or wrong. You guys come into a company and they're like, you know, look, we need better insights for sales, leads, cross-sell, whatever. And you think about, you know, how can we help you with that? I'm guessing there's probably sort of three classes of data. There's data, financial data, podcast data, social data, which you go, look, we can serve that up on a silver platter. We're really good at that. Maybe you're not leveraging that. And like you're saying, Steve, we can make sure it's the right quality. So that's like class one type of data, super easy. We can help you with that. My gut is you guys have expertise and you can say, well, look, let's turn to things like your marketing, you know, data, signal liquidity from things like that, you know, that we can help integrate that in. And then there's a third class, which is, okay, now we got to get into the guts of CRM data or product data and how clean or dirty and all this stuff is and how siloed, which is probably the hardest. Ultimately, you can help companies march through all three. But do I have that directionally correct in terms of just how you can help people with stuff that is outside their wall, that you're really good at serving up, connecting that to things that are probably easier to get to? And then there's these ones that are the hardest to wrestle to the ground. Is that kind of what you experience with customers, or is that not correct? How do you wrestle that to the ground?
I think that's the right framing. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
I got it. I nailed it.
You got it. That's what, I mean, there's also just like a really basic element to that that I think people forget. Okay. Having a singular, unique identifier for your company and for your contact data helps you to thread and join all of that together. And what I think is maybe sometimes overlooked is like, and honestly, Steve, we should probably talk about this more at ZoomInfo. Like, one of the most incredible services around data that we offer is this matching logic that is far beyond pretty much everything else on the market. There are companies internally who always try to take this on. They're like, ah, we'll build our own matching logic between our sort of unique identifiers that are in ERP, right, that are in CRM, that are from these other data vendors, et cetera. Create all sort of match and figure out how to sort of bring and join all of that data together. One of the best efforts that you can start down to get there, right, on building your sort of data foundation, is just making sure that you have a single unique identifier and that every data asset, right, is being joined and matched.
So you have to help me with that because I'm not the data scientist, but just with the audience in general, when you say this single identifier, put that in layman's terms in terms of the power of that and what you're trying to accomplish there.
Yeah. Imagine if you have seven different versions of Cisco, right, in your CRM. And you have importantly, right? You have them because one is with this Cisco business unit and that Cisco business unit, and you have different contracts with them. Well, that's important. And you want to be able to have that visibility in CRM. But somewhere in your organization, right, then those seven Ciscos might be one Cisco from your data vendor, right? Your third-party data vendor. That might be one Cisco in your financial tools, right? You've got to somehow be able to make sense of the fact that there are sort of like variations of this Cisco company. How do you ladder that back It's just one end.
Got it. Okay. Super helpful. That is interesting. Okay. So we spent a lot of time talking about how the world of sales is changing. I promised at the beginning we'd talk a little bit about how the world of PS is changing, because that's rubber meets the road for you. Some of the questions I want to ask there is, so first of all, just, you know, walk through the role that professional services at ZoomInfo plays in helping customers maximize the value of your platform. How do you typically engage with the type of services you guys provide for customers?
So I think about it as we've spent a lot of time talking about today, the data is the foundation. To get value from the data, you've got to put it to, right? You've got to integrate it into your internal processes. People have to know how to use it. It has to be able to flow downstream in all the right ways. Mm-hmm. And that so often is partly about the skill and know-how to do that. It's partly about aligning various stakeholders to be able to unlock and do the things you want to go do. And so that's where we come into play, is helping folks have the skill, the resources to be able to take this data and other capabilities we offer, but to be able to put it to work and actually have it drive value in their environment.
Perfect. And, you know, it's interesting because we study how AI is being adopted internally within tech companies and their workflows. And I can tell you that there are some aggressive early adopters like support services, education services, and there are laggards. Sales is a big laggard in general. PS is also lagging overall in terms of like really saying like, gosh, how is AI going to change, you know, the way that we're doing delivery and the way we engage with customers? So how is AI changing the way that you actually work with customers from a PS perspective?
Yeah. Well, one, AI just makes every delivery manager's life easier, right? If you think about just generally in PS, if you're delivering for a client, you know, the first thing you're going to do is a lot of research on who they are, mm-hmm. their market, right? Mm-hmm. How they sell. That's just easier, right? You're using generative AI internally, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to take all that, summarize it, and maybe structure that, right? Like let the AI tooling structure that so that you can go in and have a clear understanding of that business literally in seconds. That takes sort of the diagnostic or the initial sort of assessment from, you know, months and months of sort of digging deep to you almost have a peek around the corner, right? You already know a lot about that business before you go in and sort of talk and eke out exactly what's going on at that organization. When you couple that, I think specifically in our scenario, you know, we couple that with doing data-driven analysis out of the gate because we're sitting on this massive foundation of data. So we do sort of both. And again, if you think about it as very tactically, like, you have a bunch of notes, you might have a bunch of call transcripts, right? Yeah. And you have a bunch of data and potentially some historical data from that customer, right? You just put it in the system and it contextualizes and spits out, hey, here's what I think is going on. That every single week, even just in your sort of continuous sort of work stream with that client is extremely valuable.
Yeah.
Then if you go to, you know, in our case, a lot of our services are around models and workshops. You can build an entire workshop by just putting in a bunch of information and deliverables that you've already created, whether it be for that customer or broad learnings or strategies that, you know, that you've deployed across multiple customers. Yep. You just put all of that into the knowledge base in a cloud project, for example, and it spits out, okay, here's the structure of the workshop. Here's some ideas around facilitating that thing. Here's the structure of the slide deck that you should probably create. That is so powerful. Mm-hmm. One of the other ways in delivery that I think is really interesting is there's a lot of this sort of up and down in services of like you have sort of your on the ground delivery folks who are engaging with the client all the time. And you've got to get, you know, maybe some of your practice leaders or folks up the chain right up to speed. Well, you can take all of, again, the information or conversations that you had with that client. If you're recording those conversations back to our conversation intelligence and the importance of that, you can throw those into something like a Notebook LM, which is a Google product. Yep. It spits out a podcast. And then you send that right to your VP or your leader, and they listen to that podcast on the way to the meeting with the C-suite, and they know exactly where you're at in terms of that engagement.
So can I pause on that one? Again, I'm just intellectually curious here. So for PS, if I think it's some of, you know, the onerous workflows in PS, one of them for project managers is project status, like you're saying, like what's going on with the freaking project? Are we still on time? Are we on budget? Are we on blah, blah, blah? In AI, and ultimately, our CEO, JB Wood, and I were chit-chatting on this a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, why is that not a digital agent, right? Like, so that a customer at any point in time could basically say, I want to know the status of the project. Or like you say, your boss's boss wants to know, hey, how's that customer going? Why can't they just query the digital agent and say, like, what would you like to know? Is it on time? Yes. Is it, you know, whatever? So what do you see there in terms of that workflow right there and just project status, you know, and just being able to do that seamlessly?
Yeah. I mean, the way we actually use that today is ZoomInfo actually has an account AI tool. And, you know, PS is a part of the broader, you know, go-to-market org at ZoomInfo. Our engagement progress is actually captured in that account dossier. And we can actually chat about not only what's
you
going on
that.
Our engagement, right? We can chat about the account broadly. So we're also able to get information. Now, I think we're not quite there in terms of like providing that chat functionality and that interactivity to the client.
Like a digital agent yet. Yeah.
Definitely something we're considering.
Yeah.
I think the other side of that is thinking about all the AI agents that you can build to do some of the rote tasks. Like if you have, you know, a messaging workshop where you intake a bunch of content from a customer, for example, building a GPT that goes through and structures sort of the evaluation of that, right, in the way that is dictated by your process can be something where, again, you just upload the content or the inputs and you sort of hit go and it provides you the output. So there's these sort of custom GPTs or over, you know, in time, there'll be agents that sort of help with some of those rote deliverables that just happen all the time. So you think about it, there's probably an agent per deliverable or some subset or some subpart of that deliverable that you can over time, depending on how repeatable sort of that process is for you within PS, you know, there's varying degrees of that. I think there's an opportunity to build one of those things for your internal delivery managers. The other piece of that is when you do that, if you figure out a way to make that externally facing such that then you're actually providing tooling back to the client.
Yeah.
Can be really powerful, right? They can use that ongoing. You're not always going to be in there, but maybe they want to go through and, you know, evaluate that messaging ongoing. Great. Here's that tooling for you to sort of like pass back. And I think that's something we've struggled with in PS for a long time, which is we want to build software. We want to build tools that sort of support the servicing, but that can be fine line or a little bit tough to maybe resource, for example.
Right. Yeah. So let me ask, I'm going to test on two other use cases just for grins and giggles here. So I'm just curious what you guys are doing. One use case I've seen very successful within PS organizations is leveraging AI for RFP creation response. So you take all your past RFPs, you put them in the model. And so instead of spending hours or days, you get that first draft like that. Is that something you guys have played with yet? Or is that common? Or
it's definitely common. And it's just sort of like table stakes, any sort of part of the proposal development process, anything around the scoping that project, that content automation, you know, especially if your offerings are fairly structured, you know, your offerings are fairly mature, super easy to do.
So Millie, I'm so happy you said that, because that is how I feel about that use case. I tested you on that only because, again, for the audience, because I know there are a lot of PS organizations that, again, like when I have that conversation with them, they'd kind of look at me like, yeah, no, that's like science fiction or futures, or maybe I'll get to that. I'm thinking you're already falling behind the game, because if your competitor can get that draft like that and spend 1/10 the resource to generate it in terms of human capital, you're already falling behind the leverage curve here. And so there's one more I want to test. So this one, I do not see much in the wild, but I think there's potential here. Another super onerous, pain in the ass workflow in project-based service businesses, as you folks know well, is resource management, resource scheduling, trying to forecast how many people I need. You know, they're using AI models to ingest current project information, pipeline data, put that into a model and say, boom, here's our predictions. What do you guys think about that one? What do you see in there?
Building and enhancing ours as we speak.
Awesome. That's good. Well, we're going to write up a case study. When you guys are done with that, let's write up. I want to promote what the heck you guys are doing there, because I just think that is a killer use case. And I know that a lot of people have not cracked the code on that one yet.
I think what I'll just like offer in this is like, one, every single service offering that we have right today, every single one, my team could use AI to support the development of that.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it be using your API key for a GPT or a Claude in Sheets, right? In Google Sheets or in Excel, that's available. That's possible right now. There are AI formulas that you should be using if you're not using them today. Yeah. Whether it be Claude Projects is an incredible tool, or it's just your classic GPT. Those tools are incredibly powerful. The content automation that's available in Canva, incredible. Every single services business can be and should be thinking about how they could use AI, whether it's just like, great, summarize this thing for me, or down to the nitty gritty of sort of developing right data about their customer. They should and they can be doing that.
Yeah. And it's ultimately, I'm watching the clock here, so I don't want to keep you guys past our time together, but I really enjoyed these rabbit holes, because you're really making the case that this really should be ingrained in the way that every PS organization should be operating, right? Every workflow could be impacted by AI. And, you know, the thing that I'll say is I believe so deeply that by, you know, somebody like you, Zoom Info, investing in those capabilities internally for your internal, you know, not just your tools, your external facing tools, but for the way you're doing business internally, that is going to create a much better customer experience. That's the end game. And we're not talking about like, I'm just going to save labor or save costs. You are going to create a way better customer experience by being able to apply AI to those different workflows. And that is a big part of the end game here, is not just, you know, taking out costs and getting leverage on delivery, but it is that better customer experience. So it's really awesome you guys are, and you know, taking this so seriously. So it's fun to hear about the use cases. Well, Steve, Millie, really appreciate the time together. I think you guys put great insights on the table for both how sales organizations are operating and the importance of PS organizations to get on this AI train. So this has been fantastic. I always like to end with a question of the day for the audience. I'm going to go back to the sales side of it. And if you're out there, just one simple question: is your sales organization data-driven? Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Cheers.